What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Welcome back. Chucky's coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan and the Team 980 here in the DMV. 910 The Fan, 105.1 FM in Richmond. We're streaming live on the free Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. And you can watch us on the Monumental Sports Network, brought to you by Crop Metcalf. They're the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. Looking to be their next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just visit cropmetcalf.com to join their team. It's Bish, EB, and JP. Bish insists it's a huge year for Coach Brent Pry at Virginia Tech. He'll join us coming up at 8:40. What about our guy at Maryland?
Locks? I don't know.
He's been around a while.
Been around. You know, he's well respected, but I think by now, remember, he kind of opened himself up for some of this when he said like a year or two ago that he felt like they had arrived and they're at that point now where they should beat the Ohio State, or, you know, certainly knock off, you know, some of the elite in the Big Ten. And it hasn't really happened yet. So.
6 seasons he's coached already, so this will be season number 7.
Yeah.
They're 33-41 overall during his tenure. 16-40 in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And it's last year was pretty much a disaster. They went 1-8 in the conference, finished 4-8, 17th in the conference. He did go to 3 straight bowls before that. Mm-hmm. Pinstripe Bowl, Duke's Mayo Bowl, Music City Bowl.
Right.
3 good seasons, 7-6, 8-5, 8-5.
Yeah.
I think at Maryland, that's
decent. Yep. Pales in comparison to what Fridge did in his little run.
Different world now.
It is a different world now. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm rooting for him. He's a very likable guy.
The fact that these teams can spend more money now, especially the Maryland football program, they were not able to spend a lot of money until this new rule came down where teams can or schools can actually pay. When they had to rely on the outside NIL stuff, they're not going to match up with those Big Ten teams.
Right.
But now you can spend a lot more money on your roster. Four or five times what they spent 2 years ago.
You know, these teams, these schools, some of these big schools, their endowments, you know, there's plenty of funds that they can draw on if they want to. All right, 800-636-1067. In the last segment, we were talking about the projected rankings. Who put it out there? ESPN put it out there. Mm-hmm. The 3-year projection for these teams, and you know, right at the very top, you know, no qualms. I mean, you have the Eagles 1, Ravens 2. Would you have the Chiefs 3 or maybe 4?
I think the Chiefs were 3.
Chiefs 3.
Bills were 4, I believe.
Bills 4. Okay, no problem. I feel like we should slide in kind of where the Jaden has been sliding in a lot of these quarterback arguments. Obviously, they're holding the age of the roster against us. It's fair criticism. But I also think if you're also judging the other criteria in this, what they allegedly are, your coaching staff, I put it right up there with most. Our front office, you know, early returns, but you know, people seem to be very high on them. And ownership, I mean, it's a dramatic improvement. I mean, that doesn't matter, but so I feel like we're in pretty good stead everywhere other than roster. And I feel like that's going to naturally evolve as long as we, you know, got to draft well.
But just if you stack them right now, you can give Jaden Daniels the quarterback edge over Jared Goff, no problem there.
Yeah,
but this is something we talked about throughout the season last year, even when they were rolling, even when they were beating these teams, that player for player, they don't necessarily match up.
Well, certainly.
So the Lions, they beat great offensive performance, but player for player, and Washington has improved their offensive line by bringing in, you know, via trade, Tunsil. They just don't have that many, like, studs. And so what ESPN pointed out, and you can argue, is especially without Terry, and Terry's older, you don't have what Detroit has. They've got Amon-Ra. They've got Jameson Williams. They've got Jahmyr Gibbs. So not just at receiver, running back. And okay. So I think that's where I think Washington falls behind.
Let's come back to this in 2 years and see where we stand. I think that we'll be a little bit better then I think I'm optimistic.
I would think so. Everybody has faith in Adam Peters so far. Yeah. So you would think that they would upgrade the roster in those positions.
Well, it's obvious they're going to. I mean, they have
to. Sometimes you can whiff.
Yeah.
You know, Ron Rivera whiffed over and over again. He tried to upgrade the roster. His guys didn't work out.
Maybe you think that's fair. 10th, I mean, hey, it's way up from where we've been ranked. You know, if you did this kind of thing a couple years ago,
27, pre-Jaden, 28.
You'd have us 28, 29 projected. So, I mean, it's a huge leap,
Eric,
which is great.
Eric, I will do a $5 bet with you that the Detroit Lions over the next 2 years will have more regular season wins than the Washington Commanders.
No, how about, I won't do that because I think that that's fair, but how about, give me 3 years and let's do total postseason wins. Just total postseason wins. I'll do total postseason wins.
Hold on. Regular season wins?
Yeah, because I think maybe we have, I have to look at schedules and everything, but I'll do postseason wins because I think ultimately that's what you're judged on. I think that's more important than regular season. Keep losing the first round or whatever. I think that we're built for playoff runs. I think, NFC East might be tough. We got to play against the Eagles twice. I'll do that. $5. I mean, it's not nothing.
By the way, I didn't give you the individual breakdowns. So to Valdez's point, when they talked about the Lions who finished fifth, they had their overall roster ranked third. That's minus the quarterback. They had their quarterback 12th. They're coaching 12th and their front office 4th. Here's where they came up with Washington's grade, which was 83.2, which finished 10th.
I'd like to hear this.
Amongst their future rankings. Yeah. Overall roster, NFL rank.
Yeah.
Scores is 79.5, which ranked 13th in the NFL.
Okay.
Quarterback, 92.5, ranked 5th.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This is surprising, and this is what I think hurts their overall grade. Coaching, they have ranked 16th.
Yeah.
I mean, does it express
81.3.
Why? Any rationale for that?
I mean, Quinn, I don't think his overall tenure was amazing in Atlanta, right? He had a great year going to the Super Bowl.
No, he was basically 500.
Yeah.
He was one game above 500 in Atlanta.
Did great this year, but
maybe. And then front office, they have.
Mostly basing it on Quinn, I don't know.
Yeah, front office, they have 8th. I mean, I guess if you went through the coaches, right? Where are you going to put Quinn? You're not going to put him above Sirianni based on what he's done. You're not going to put him above Harbaugh. I mean, you can kind of just go through the teams. You're not going to put him above Andy Reid.
Right, but I think he's in that next
You're
tier.
Not going to put him above Buffalo's coach just because he doesn't have the long-term success.
Yeah, I just think that's based on the talent you have. So the more talent you have, you're going to have more wins, and your coaching rank will go up.
Yeah.
So let's see what happens this year. But I think I'd have him higher than 16.
That's what kind of brought them down to 10th, because every team ranked above them has coaching.
They have the coaching lower than they have the roster.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Josh. 800-636-1067 if you want to chime in. Josh wants to talk about the Terry deal, but how do you feel about the ranking there over the next 3 years? They've got us 10th. I mean, it's not like at the end of the day, it's way above where we are used to being ranked. Josh, what's
way
up?
Way above.
Yeah.
Hey, gentlemen, thanks for having me. Yeah. Definitely way above where we used to be.
Yeah.
That's why I haven't called you guys in a couple of years, since about 2020.
Yeah.
But I believe in front office and management with Jaden, the talent that they could surround him.
Right.
I think we could be ranked around 10th.
Okay, so you're fair with it. You're okay with it.
I'm fair with that.
Yeah.
For my Terry take, though,
yeah.
Let's talk about the guarantees, right?
Yeah.
Based on, what we see online, his guarantee this year is about 20. It might be 15, but let's just go with 20. The cap hit is 25. We know 5 of that is carried over from that signing bonus that he signed for the current deal. Mm-hmm. This year, that's basically guaranteed. And then the cap for wide receivers next year is about 24. Then Terry's floor for the next 2 years guaranteed is $44 million.
Okay.
If what he's saying is he wants to beat DK, then that's $61 million. DK has a deal with $90 million of incentivized fluff money.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we get Terry a $61 million deal, and it's not going to be fully guaranteed at signing? Each year in March, You know, they have to re-guarantee, you know, the rest of the deal. So why can't we write up a fluff contract, 3 years, 101, that's $33.67 fake AAV numbers with soft guarantees of 61.
Well, because they understand the soft, they understand the soft guarantees. Like, they get it. Like, that would be a PR thing they could do if he just wanted to save face. But they want more, right? I'm assuming. They want more hard guarantee.
But DK is the number that's being reported, and his hard guarantee is 60.
Right, I don't think they're at 60.
Yeah, they could be at 40.
I think maybe they're closer 50. To what Sutton got, which I thought was in the 40 range.
I thought it was 44 or 42.
Yeah.
But if he's getting 20 this year and then he doesn't sign and they tag him, that's 44 right there.
Right, but I'm not sure they're going to tag him.
Why would they franchise tag a 30-year-old receiver?
Yeah, I don't know. They
guarantee him 31 million.
If he has a great year and there's no contract signed and he refuses to sign and he holds in again, they're going to have to tag him or trade him before the draft because AP is smart.
Well, hold on. Next
well,
year,
they wouldn't be able to. They would have to trade him before
contract.
The deadline.
Yeah, he would be under contract if they don't.
They would have to trade him before October 31st.
Right, and then they would say maybe.
And I don't see that.
What's
happening.
The best they could get Valdez in a compensatory pick for a guy like Terry? What's the best it's they could get?
Well, it depends on when or for how much he signs the contract, but probably a third round.
Yeah, like that's the best they could do. But they would probably say, "All right, we'll just take the third rounder. We're not going to pay you 34 million or whatever."
What Josh is in theory that works, but you don't know what AP's thinking. If AP's thinking, he might want to use that franchise tag year on Laremy Tunsil if he has a great year.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can't just assume that he can use it for Terry. He might have different plans for that tag.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to use a franchise tag.
They got a bunch of guys
Terry.
Next year. They're going to be in a similar boat. Okay.
But if we look at the Sutton deal, he's around 24.
Right.
That's 24.
Right.
That's what they're reporting.
Right.
That's what the national guys are reporting. That's where AP's at.
Right.
24 is still 24.
Listen, I agree.
But let's see how it ends up.
So easy for callers.
Over this year, next year, and then that last year, is the third year is dependent on how he performs in that second year and if he's still healthy.
Right.
They can rip that last year up and give him a 2-year, $30 million deal. He'll take that.
Yeah. Hey, you should email Josh Harris.
Thank you. Hey, Josh, thank you.
Why would I hold on. If I was Terry, why would I do that? Because not only is the cap going up, but now different deals are going to be coming up. And so I wouldn't take 30 when the going rate for someone my age could be 36, and especially in 2 years.
If he's 32, and he already got $45 million.
Now you're just counting 29
right now.
I know, but now you're just counting a man's money, and you're saying, "Well, you made this much money. Now you're good. You're fine. You can take whatever you want." It doesn't work like that.
I think he would slow down a little bit, and I think he would be okay with either that last 17 that I'm projecting. If they rip that up and turn that into 25, that's more than 17 guaranteed that he's still taking home.
Mm-hmm.
Josh, I'm gonna let you go. At the end of the day, how do you think it's gonna be resolved?
I think that they're gonna cave in at a couple days before week one, like all the other good franchises. The Lamar Jackson Ravens,
Let's see.
With Ayuk, all those guys. Mm-hmm. Thanks, guys. Though,
all right,
thank you, buddy.
Appreciate you still listening.
Thank you.
Listening under better circumstances. Hadn't heard. I guess he only called in when they were.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from.
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Terrible. All right, if you want to chime in, 800-636-1067. Have an announcement coming up, plus Brent Pry, head coach at Virginia Tech. He'll join us at 8:40. Don't go anywhere.
Your calls on the preseason, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. We will get to them in about 15 minutes. We got a poll question up right now on the Team 980's Twitter page, at the Team 980. Who looked the best to you in the preseason? Who had the best showing? Johnny Newton, Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt, a.k.a. Bill, Josh Connerly, or other? Reply if you choose other. Don't just choose other. You got to tell us who the other is. Right now, Johnny Newton is very much ahead, but we'll allow some people to go and vote on that poll. We'll get Max's answer in just a second. It's time to do some takeaways, though, and look, it's the preseason. I'm not going to get too out of my skis here and be like, wow, I think Johnny Newton's going to be a Hall of Famer now. I'm not going to do that. Now, could he be a Hall of Famer? That is possible. I don't know. You know, there's a long career hopefully ahead of him, and hopefully all that career is here if he ends up being a Hall of Famer. But here's some of my takeaways from the preseason game number one. Who cares about the results? I don't. The Patriots whooped our ass. I don't really care. It's a bunch of twos and threes and guys that hopefully never actually play a game for Washington for a large majority of who were playing on Friday. So I don't really care what happened in like the third and fourth quarter. I barely care what happened in the second quarter. Outside of the penalties, I think the penalty speaks to a little bit of a larger issue of maybe not taking practice as seriously as practice needs to be taken. So that, I think, is a fair takeaway here. The biggest standout to me, though, was Johnny Newton, because Johnny Newton was going up against the ones for the Patriots. They played their offensive line, especially on the interior of their offensive line. How do we know this? Because you have to be the biggest imbecile, and Mike Vrabel is not. You have to be the biggest imbecile if you're going to trot your starting day one quarterback, the future of your franchise, Drake May, out behind number twos on the offensive line. You're not going to do that. When Jaden Daniels plays in the preseason, which is hopefully going to be against Cincinnati, we will get more confirmation on that this week. When Jaden goes out there, he's not going to be playing behind the number twos on the offensive line. You just don't do that. So Johnny Newton played against the number ones for New England, and Johnny Newton was fantastic on defense. He's much more of a pass rusher than he is a run stopper. That's why the team signed Javon Kinlaw. Javon Kinlaw is a massive human being, and he is going to eat double teams, which will in turn open up space for Bobby Wagner, and then potentially, whether it be Johnny Newton or Daron Payne, give them single matchups and then allow them to go one-on-one against somebody, get off the block, get to the hole, make the stop, right? So Javon Kinlaw is going to be your run stuffer. Johnny Newton was not playing with Javon Kinlaw. Javon Kinlaw did not play. So on the run, he didn't look great. That's fine. Fair. In the pass rush, though, oh, Lord have mercy. In the pass rush, Johnny Newton was excellent. A really, really strong performance. He had the sack and then what ended up being the strip sack, forcing a fumble. He was excellent. And you know, there had been a lot of talk about Johnny Newton this offseason. Some positive, some maybe not so positive, because people were looking at what happened in 2024 and saying, well, he didn't pan out. He wasn't good. He wasn't good. The defensive line sucks. He wasn't very good. And admittedly, he was not sensational in 2024, but he also was hurt for the entire offseason. So now with a full offseason, healthy, and now a full offseason of understanding what it means to be a professional in the NFL, I have insanely high expectations for Johnny Newton. If what we saw in the preseason game was what we are going to get in the regular season, Johnny Newton is going to be an animal. And the combination, the three-man weave of Javon Kinlaw, Daron Payne, and Johnny Newton could be a very, very dangerous combination for an offensive, or for a defensive unit, rather, a defensive line unit that on the interior in particular was kind of awful last year. So I didn't expect that Newton was going to ball out the way that he did against the Patriots' number ones, but he looked really, really sharp and really, really dominant in a way that we have not seen from that position since Daron Payne was up for a contract. I don't know that he's going to have 11 and a half sacks this season. That's not what I'm getting at, but it was nice to see that he does have a little bit of dominance in him. And if we pair him up with guys that are actual number ones, like a Kinlaw, like a Daron Payne, there could be something there with the Johnny Newton hype. I really, really loved what I saw from Johnny Newton. Number two on the takeaways that are positive. The hype for Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt is going to be insane, Max. It already was crazy. It already was. it is not going to slow down anytime in the near future.
It shouldn't. Those cuts he was making something out of nothing, and it was very impressive.
There was some real vision there with Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. And there was some real getting skinny, as they say,
yeah,
in fitting his way through the hole. You look at his numbers, 7 carries, 24 yards. That's not going to jump off of the page at you. It doesn't have to. I don't really care. Again, stats in the preseason, not much. But just seeing the way that he ran with a violence that it feels like we have not seen here in a little bit.
Runs like Pacheco.
With his awareness of finding the hole, attacking the hole, but then his peripheral vision to cut when needed is something we really haven't seen in a long time. It's a combination of violent running but legitimate agility that he has that is not possessed by another running back on the roster. And if we're honest with ourselves, a main reason why we care so much, or why we are so, as fans, hype about Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt is because a lot of us are kind of done with Brian Robinson in some capacity or another. Had really high hopes for him in 2024. He did not live up to those high hopes in 2024, and now people are kind of mostly indifferent about what he is going to be on this team, understanding that he's likely not going to be back next year, because you're not going to shell out a lot of money to a running back that you don't think is very good. And he had all the reasons to be good last year, and he still couldn't get over 1,000 yards. He still couldn't have that Alfred Morris-esque season that Alfred had with Robert in his first year. It might be a little unfair to think that Brian Robinson was going to go for 1,200 just playing next to Jayden Daniels for the first time, but we thought he was going to be better than he was, and towards the end of the season, there are points in times where it felt like Brian Robinson was leaving a lot on the field. So that is a major reason as to why we are so infatuated with Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, because he does some things that Brian Robinson does not do, that a majority of us have been wanting Brian Robinson to do for years, and it feels like Bill is a much better natural at some of those things. Like, he plays the running back position very naturally. There's an ease with him. It's like this weird combination. It's a perfect combination, but it's a weird combination of ease and violence. You don't normally get those two things. But he's so easy at playing the position, and then he runs with a violence and a speed and agility that we have not really seen. So the hype for him is only going to continue to get higher and higher and higher. He's still not going to be the day one starter. Brian Robinson is not going to get cut, but Bill is going to make this roster. I always thought that he was going to make the roster. I did not imagine that he was not going to make the roster, but he is going to make the roster, and he's going to kind of twist the arm of the decision makers a little bit, because there's no chance he makes it to the practice squad. It's just not going to happen, which means McNichols and Chris Rodriguez, they are likely going to be guys that they release and say, I really hope that you're here for the practice squad, unless they decide to keep four running backs. I can't imagine they're keeping four running backs, although some of these guys do play special teams, which is you can justify potentially keeping four if they all play special teams. But the hype for Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt is only going to get higher and higher. Number three, Josh Connerly Jr. was really, really good. How do I know that Josh Connerly Jr. was really, really good? Because he was not talked about at all. When you are a rookie right tackle playing in your first preseason game, you're not going to get like Shedeur Sanders hype, understood. But you should be mentioned a lot more than he was. And he wasn't mentioned, which means the commentators did not have a reason to mention him. And trust me, if he had sucked, they would have mentioned him. And he did not. He did his job. He handled his business. It had been a little bit of an up and down kind of training camp for him. You're learning a new position. This is natural. It's going to happen with rookies in the NFL. You're learning a new position. He played left tackle in college. They're moving him to right tackle because you have Laremy Tunsil at left tackle, and you're not moving him off of the left side. So he's learning a new position. He's going up against much better athletes. Now, he played in the Big Ten, so the Big Ten did have good athletes along the defensive line, but he's going up against much better athletes. There had been some up and down days in the preseason or in training camp, but on Friday, he looked really, really good. And if you want to care about Pro Football Focus grades, he graded 77.7 in run blocking. Having a right tackle that likes to block in the run game is crucial. Wiley was good last year. He wasn't great. Well, maybe Wiley was fine last year. He certainly wasn't great maybe you could argue good. But if Connerly, who eventually is going to take over that spot, don't know if he's going to be starting week one. I don't think it's a huge issue if he is not starting week one, but he will eventually take over that spot. He played really, really well in his first action in the preseason game. Trey Amos also looked really good. He wasn't thrown to a ton. I would have really liked if New England tried to test Trey Amos a little bit more just to kind of see. You know, it's one thing to see him perform at a high level in training camp when there's no Terry and no Noah Brown. You get occasional matchups with Deebo Samuel, but for the most part, you're going up against guys that at best are wide receiver four on this roster, and on other rosters might be wide receiver five in some instances. So it's kind of hard to tell how good he is when he's going up against the guys that are in camp now with Terry and Noah not being participants. But I thought he looked pretty good in the limited amounts of times that we saw the ball come his direction in preseason game number one. I'm excited about him. I think that defensive backfield is so, so, so much better than it was last year. Noah Ai, who was number three as a corner last year, is now like number five. And he was I thought Noah Ai was a pretty decent number three last year, Max. He's like a really good number five. If he's your fifth option, you feel really good about the four guys that are ahead of him in that depth chart. Ja'Cory Brooks played really well. I would have liked to see him play maybe a little bit earlier so you see him get work against some twos and maybe like a one in there, although they didn't play a lot of their ones on defense, did New England. But he looked really good. Tay Martin also really shined, I thought, at the wide receiver spot. I was hoping we'd see a lot more from Jalen Lane. We did not. I was hoping we'd see a lot more from Luke McCaffrey. We did not. I think that was by design. Those two guys feel like their position is cemented on the roster, at least for sure. Jalen Lane is, because you're not going to draft a guy in the third round and then immediately turn around and cut him. That's not going to happen. So Jalen Lane feels pretty good, and I would imagine that Luke McCaffrey is on this roster as well. So you already have five wide receivers on this roster, with Noah Brown, Deebo, and Terry being the other five, because yes, Terry is going to be on the roster week one, and he's going to be playing for the Commanders in week one. Will he have a new contract? I don't know. But he's going to be playing for the team in week number one. So you already have five wide receivers. If you keep six, that means one slot is open. If you keep seven, obviously that would mean two slots are open. I wanted to see a little bit more from, though, Luke and Jalen, just to kind of see what is being worked with here and what you can realistically expect. Really, I just don't want to waste all my money again betting Luke McCaffrey anytime touchdowns, Max.
I think we're Jalen Lane.
I think so.
We'll discuss.
Yeah, I'm still going to bet Luke McCaffrey week one.
I probably will.
Like, I'm gonna bet it until it doesn't happen, because the one time I don't bet it, it's going to happen.
That's the one. Yeah.
So like, I just have to be locked in for the ride.
Got to be consistent. Keep
those were my
now.
Biggest positive takeaways. There were some negative takeaways. I will get to those when we get back, and then it will be your turn. 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. What were your biggest takeaways from preseason game number one for the Commanders in their loss to New England? Your calls coming up. My negative takeaways when we get back.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now, connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day, sitting in for Kevin on the Team 980.
There's a lot of positions where the Commanders are going to end up cutting a player that's going to end up playing in the NFL for somebody else this year, which has not been the case in a long time. That is evidence of the fact that they are better, I think, number one. But number two, that they have a old team, honestly. I mean, you look at wide receiver, they're going to cut names. Like Michael Gallup, KJ Osborne, Chris Moore, a couple of maybe those guys are going to be available and probably get signed by someone and kick around on a practice squad, get a chance to catch a pass this year. There are other spots defensively. I was thinking about the defensive line. You know, if they keep 9 or 10, Armstrong, Payne, Kinlaw, Miller, Wise, Goldman, Newton, Farrell, Baptiste, Day, Carl Davis, Jacob Martin, Jalen Holmes is at an awesome camp. Mm-hmm. Andre Jones, former 7th-round pick. Like, there's dudes here that get cut that are going to play somewhere else. I really believe that. The spot that I really had this epiphany watching practice about today was the running back room. Because everything's been about Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt.
Mm-hmm.
This Bill Merritt breakout, everyone's, I don't even want to say overdoing, but correctly discussing that he looks the part, and now everybody saw it in the preseason. There's no secrets anymore, and you guys see what we see. It's the one cut, it's the up the field, it's the physical violent running. He had probably three plays that particularly stood out to me against the Patriots where I go, you see? That's the thing. That's what everybody's been talking about. But let's say he's on the team and you can put that one in pen.
Mm-hmm.
Robinson, Eckler, Merritt, likely to keep at least three. They could keep four backs. They're definitely not keeping five. They have Chris Rodriguez on this roster right now. Got cut at the beginning of last year at the end of camp. Ended up running the football as effectively in the same role as Brian Robinson, basically. I don't think that, this is my little hot take, I don't think the gap or the difference between B-Rob and Rodriguez is that significant. But Rodriguez is probably not going to make the team. He's an NFL running back to me. Every time that guy plays, he goes out and averages 4.5, 5 yards a carry for a couple games at a time. Jeremy McNichols was on this team last year. He was good. He was actually helpful. He caught passes. He ran the football effectively. Go back to the Cardinals game. I think he scored a couple touchdowns when they hung 40 on Arizona. Like, there were games where Jeremy McNichols was a not just an NFL running back, a solid NFL running back. He's not going to be on this team, maybe. Dimitric Felton got carries dating back to 2022 in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns. That guy's been on fantasy rosters before. He was like a flavor of the month in the past. You saw the preseason game against New England. He looked pretty good. He had 42 yards, averaged 6 a carry. Today, they didn't give out an MVP award. That would have been really wacky in their little scrimmage. Dimitric Felton was the most effective player. Like, from a stat line, if you could look at a box score, nobody had a better statistical game than he did. He had a touchdown run, ripped off two really impressive runs. He was probably the biggest offensive standout of anybody in that practice. And so my point is, at a position where they're likely to keep three, maybe keep four, Robinson, Eckler, Merritt, McNichols, Rodriguez, Felton, that's six guys. Half of them may not make it. At least two of them won't make it. I'm not even going to bring up Kaz Allen, who I think is super interesting and can catch the football and was a wide receiver return man in college who flashes occasionally at practice. But that's just one position group to point out. They've got a ton of talent, and they're going to end up cutting some decent players.
Yeah, I don't think there's a star there.
Definitely not.
You know what I mean? And that's kind of what we're always sort of looking for in huntings, that bell cow, that 250, 300 touch running back. I don't think that exists in here, but there's a lot of guys that are, I don't know how to say this better than that. It sounds disrespectful, but fives out of 10 at the running back spot, but they get to that five in different ways, like different attributes, right? Like McNichols a little bit more pass catcher, maybe than Rodriguez, who's more MJD kind of power style.
It's like
style.
Saying they've got a rotation full of fourth and fifth starters.
Yeah, exactly.
But they've got eight of those guys for five spots in baseball parlance.
Totally.
You know, they have six running backs for three or four spots. Yeah, maybe it's all third and fourth starters, but they actually have some decent depth of guys that are somewhat redundant or comparable.
No, but there is depth there, kind of to your point, right? So you can do a hot hand bit. I mean, there are times where, again, I always point to that Atlanta game where Rodriguez ran the ball the best of any running back that was on the field that day. There were games where McNichols that had that title, certainly, right? So it is going to be fascinating. But the question then becomes, who can you get to the practice squad, right? If there's an issue there, if there's a potential. Like, are you terrified of losing Kaz Allen? No. Probably, right? I mean, if anybody
definitely
wants,
not.
Somebody poaches Kaz Allen from you, fare thee well, I'll help you pack your bag. Somebody steals Dimitric Felton from you because they're desperate. You know, I wonder how much better these guys are than the other six or seven running backs that are in, name that city now.
I don't know. Well, those two guys specifically, I don't think they are at all. Like, you could get Felton to your practice squad. Do I think that there's 20 Chris Rodriguez's necessarily being cut? I don't. Like, again, maybe I'm higher on him than most, but I've got...
Every time we've seen him, he's done well.
I was going to say, I've got the... I'm not going to say tape on my side, but I've got performance on my side. When he plays, he produces. I mean, how big is the gap between Brian Robinson and Chris Rodriguez? I posed this to someone out there with the team, and basically what came back to me was Robinson is more of... You know, gives you more of a chance to actually be a bit of a horse. Like, he could take on the workload. I just think that you've seen him do it. That's the difference. How do you know Chris Rodriguez couldn't be that guy? I don't remember if it was the Giants game. Last year, he had like a 17-carry game, if I remember, didn't he? Where he got, he like toted the mail a little bit. at one point last year. Maybe I'm making that up. I'd have to look. But for some reason, that sticks out in my head.
Tennessee game where they were blowing him out and everyone ran for a million yards. 13.
Okay.
There was an 11-carry game against the Giants, 11 for 52.
So 11.
Yeah,
so,
when nobody was doing anything on the ground that game except for him.
By the way, that's a second half. That's like a half of football. Right. So that's like a 20, 22-carry, whatever it is, like pace that he's on. Who's to say he couldn't go out and be B-Rob and go 15 for 75 or something? Now, I'm not saying that Robinson's not going to start. He's going to. They've had the chance back-to-back off seasons as a staff to go in a different direction. They have not. My point is just they'll cut Rodriguez, and he is the kind of guy to me that is not that different from your actual starter.
Well, when you say the gap isn't that big, has Robinson improved? Thank you. Listen, I'm over it. I'm ready for something else. So if you want to power back, I'll do Chris Rodriguez. Again, Robinson's got a role on my team.
Would you actually consider, in a world where you're keeping four, well, how do I want to say that? Okay, would you consider Robinson out, Rodriguez in?
No, because he's a third-round draft pick, and there's no financial incentive to do that. Like, I'm keeping him because the difference really, and I'm shtick aside, isn't really that big between the two guys.
Correct.
I can afford to tinker around with Rodriguez to practice squad and that sort of stuff. But to me, I'm over and out on the Brian Robinson era. Love that dude. Really impressive guy. Again, what he's gone through, that's a separate issue for me from the football part of it. I have no interest in the football part of it. Other than I got a 4th-and-1, I'll trot him out there and ram him into the line of scrimmage a couple different times, but he is not leading my team in carries by a long shot. But they seem to want to do that.
Yeah, I just feel like by now we kind of have the information we need. The tragic, awful situation that unfolded in his rookie year where he got shot in the leg.
Shot in the knee.
Going to pick up food in D.C. back in the summer of 2022 is not lost on me. And what I mean by that is, like, he comes back 4 games into the season, comes out of the tunnel like 50 Cent playing.
Unbelievable,
dude. Crazy, right? He walks out, and it was an awesome scene. I still remember the smoke and the song and the edits that were all over social media. And he ended up averaging 3.9 a pop. Now, every year it's gotten a little bit better. And a Brian Robinson truther or some defender of his could say, well, every year his average has gone up to 3.9 to 4.1 to 4.3. It was a 4.0 yard per carry average for 2 seasons. It's currently 4.1 through 3 now years and 570 attempts. I know what I got here.
Yeah.
It's a singles hitter.
It was the worst on the team last year for anybody that carried it more than a couple times.
Yeah. Eckler averaged more. Rodriguez averaged more. Correct. But it's singles with the occasional double. I'm looking for a gap-to-gap doubles hitter who could hit the ball over the fence. I think Merritt could be that guy. So he's going to play a lot for me pretty early on. I'm going to spend the rest of the preseason finding out, can he pass pro?
Yep.
Is he good in these other areas? I should point out, I don't think this should alarm anybody, but I'm just throwing out there what I learned today. He did not play at all in this scrimmage, this burgundy versus gold scrimmage today. And I grabbed him after practice real quick and just asked him about it. And he's dealing with a little bit of a sore shoulder or something. I don't think it's anything. But it was one of those, like, why are we pushing him? We got 9 days between the 2 games. And they kind of held him out. That having been said, that Bengals game, he's going to work with the ones for me.
Well, yeah. Well, here's why that matters is because what you're thinking about is what they're thinking about. Going, what about week 14, 15, 16? And this long grind, can he sustain that? Can he play for us and be a bell cow or be a guy that we can give 10, 12, 15 touches to? Maybe the answer is no if that's what happens after one start. Again, you're not holding it against him because you're trying to think long term, but they're trying to prognosticate not just who's good against the Giants in week one, but when we're keeping people around, who can still help us kind of as the season grinds on and the hits pile up.
I think they'll keep four and McNichols might be in as like a return man, special teamer.
Teams guy, yeah.
Especially if he can cover. And I haven't watched close enough. I'll have to maybe monitor that. But if he could prove like willingness to get down there and make a tackle on teams, maybe he saves his bacon and he makes the team that way. Because he's one of these guys that just he's beloved in the locker room. Mm-hmm. Like what the players would call, he's a dog. You know, he's just one of those dudes you want on your side. Send him out into the alley with you to go fight everybody. And so players will be rooting for him to make the squad. But I know Robinson and Eckler are in. I'd assume Merritt's going to be in. And that might be a position where, especially with practice squad, whether it's Rodriguez you could get through. I'm not convinced or sold, but maybe you could. It's been forever since they've had anybody claimed. I always just defer to the possibility that you can get a guy through. But like Rodriguez, Felton, Kaz Allen, McNichols, two of those guys could be on your practice squad. And then it's they're still on your roster. It doesn't matter if they're on the active roster or not. So I probably would try to save a spot somewhere else and just keep three. especially because Robinson and Eckler are so different and do different things.
Totally. And they're, yeah, they're thunder and lightning, whatever you want to call it. They're yin and yang. They're opposite players.
And Debo,
it's going to be such,
gives you like
exactly.
a little bit of like, I could line him up and give him a carry in an emergency. Same thing with the Jalen Lane
here and there.
So I don't know that you need to, like, if you're worried about what if two guys go down, well, you still have somebody, let's say Merritt, the third guy, to be that guy, and then you still have someone else who can take carries from receiver.
Well, when you start doing the math on it, right, and some guys have already done some early roster prognostications, and you go, we'll keep 9 defensive linemen or maybe 10. Uh-oh, well, where are you going to cut? Like, where's that spot for you? And if you can get a guy or two to the practice squad that will come up, a la Chris Rodriguez last year, then maybe that's where you sacrifice a little bit.
Talk on the Team 980 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
But you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com. That's ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. So the question at 301-230-0980 is, give me the player that when you're having conversations about your favorite football team, the Washington football team, Redskins, Skins, Commanders, WFT, give me the player that keeps coming up as a player that you think is going to have a big season. Look, Jaden Daniels is pretty much going to be uniform, but it's more of that sneaky, this guy, trust me, big season from him. Might be a breakout season from a player who hasn't had a great season yet. I'm going to give you my guy. I've mentioned him a few times. I feel like Debo Samuel's going to have a big year in Washington. I think the fit is perfect with the best quarterback he will have played for and played with during his career. An outstanding coordinator, a creative coordinator. Not that he's not used to that, because he had that, obviously, with Kyle Shanahan. With a team that, you know, likes to be dynamic, likes to be multiple, and I think has big ideas for him. It's a contract year for Debo Samuel. He is capable of very high-level football. He is an absolute beast with the ball in his hands when he's healthy. It's impossible for one guy to get him to the ground. He will generate unbelievable yards after contact. I think they're going to try to get him the ball early and often. It's not a force feed a number one wide receiver deal. It's a force feed your best weapon deal. Debo has a chance to be their best weapon on offense. He's got to be healthy, you know, and he has been banged up. And the thing about him is he plays banged up. And he'll have more incentive to play banged up. Now, apparently he is reported in some of the best shape he's been in the last few years. I just think that this is going to make Adam Peters and company look really good. And by the way, create a really interesting offseason conversation about what Debo is worth and whether or not you can keep him here rather than having him go to free agency. So Debo is my guy. I've got other guys too. I've mentioned Daron Payne. I mean, I'm a big Daron Payne fan in terms of his talent. By the way, I wanted to mention last year when we did this segment, because I went back and looked at some of my notes, other than Jaden Daniels, my guy was Brian Robinson Jr. Before the season started, I was really high on B-Rob having a big season because of the quarterback. I thought, you know, with a dual threat and a dual threat attack, that Brian Robinson Jr. would feast with Jaden Daniels as his quarterback. You know, there were health issues. He had some games, but it was not the season, obviously, that I thought it would be this time last year. So I was dead wrong last year, you know, with my Brian Robinson Jr. But Debo's the guy. When I've had conversations, and many of them now, especially this time of year, about the team, I talk about Debo. I think Debo's going to have a big 2025 as a Washington Commander. Again, there are some other players that I've thought about, but nobody that I'm as confident, because offensively, I feel more confident about the offense than I do anything defensively. Feel more confident about Jaden and Cliff more than anything else right now. And I just think that they're going to use him in ways in which he's going to feast. It would be better for him to have a healthy and happy Terry McLaurin. I think he's going to have a healthy Terry McLaurin on the field with him on September 7th. I think that they will really impact each other in terms of, you know, you got two players, two weapons on the field. Debo's a unique weapon, though. Debo's my guy. 301-230-0980. The guy you've been telling your friends about, this guy's going to have a big season. My guy is Debo. Max, what about you?
So I've got a couple guys. They're all on the defensive side of the football, which is very
I want your number one guy.
All right.
I want you, and hold back the others if we don't hear them from
we'll
from
do.
Callers.
Well, I know that this one guy keeps popping up on the callers, and he was the first guy that came to mind, and he's shown the ability to retool, get better throughout the season, learn during a season as opposed to going into the offseason, getting better, looking at film. He can do that during and throughout like a playoff run. It's Mike Sainristil still. He's just, last year he was so serviceable and just the versatile. We could move him around, put him on the outside. Like he had to go up against Ja'Marr Chase in week three. So like his feet got put to the fire pretty early. And I think that experience is going to do him, or it did him some good last year, just being able to learn and grow throughout the season as opposed, like I said, to just having to retool into an off season. So I'm going to plant my flag, and it's going to be Mike Sainristil still.
That's fine. I think you need to go further, though, if you're going to say Mikey Sainristil still. I think you have to say Mikey Sainristil still is going to be a Pro Bowl cornerback this year for the team. Because I don't think there's a lot of debate about what he was last year, and I don't think there's a lot of debate about how good he's going to be for this team this year. I think if you're going to choose, if you're having conversations with your friends and you're like, you know who's going to be really good this year? Sainristil. Because if I'm having that conversation with you, I'm like, yeah, he was really good last year too. But then you would say, no, I'm talking about this guy's going to be a Pro Bowl cornerback in the NFC. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's, if you're going to use Sainristil, you got to take it. If you're going to use Sainristil, if you're going to use Jaden, you got to take it to a point in which people aren't thinking about that. Maybe some people are thinking about Mikey Sainristil as a Pro Bowl corner. He had a very good rookie season. And the thing about Sainristil is quality everywhere. Smart, intuitive, instinctive. He has great communication ability. He's going to be a big-time leader in this league on that side of the ball. So are you willing to go to Pro Bowl level?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. With everything that Mikey showed last year, I've been really high on, like you said, his leadership potential and just that experience that he had at Michigan of playing receiver.
Will he do it as a slot corner or as an outside corner?
He'll do it as a slot corner. I think that one of the other guys I have on this list that nobody has mentioned on the calls yet is rookie Trey Amos, because everything I've heard out of his camp has been incredible. And I think he's going to be a really solid piece going forward at the outside corner spot.
Chad in Nashville, kick it off. The guy that you've been telling your friends about is going to have a big season. Go ahead.
Well, I agree with Sainristil. Of course, Debo. Anytime you have the caliber player of Debo in a contract year, you're going to get, you know, you're going to get hopefully that type of play. I try to think out of the box, and I had to, but you said pick one. Okay. I'm going to go Quan Martin. And if we got to go as far as you're saying Max has got to go, You know what? I'm going to say it. I think Quan Martin's going to be a Pro Bowl. I think he's going to be a Pro Bowl safety this year. The caliber of teams we're going to go against is going to be, you know, higher than last year. He's going to have a chance to show what a coach is like in him. I think our front seven is going to be better than last year because it's also a second year in the system. Plus, I think Von Miller is going to help out the pass rush a lot.
I have a feeling he's going to also.
Think he is.
Yeah. I think he's going to also.
And if that's the case, your secondary should play better. Now, you don't have Jeremy Chinn. Quan Martin, who's the guy they signed?
Will Harris.
Help me out, Kevin. From Will Harris. I think Quan Martin has a chance to be their best safety on the team.
The other night, Chad, I had Johnny Newton on my podcast after the game from Foxborough, from the locker room. I asked him basically the question that I'm asking you guys. His answer was Quan Martin. He said,
really?
Quan Martin's going to be the guy that really, I think he said, shocks a lot of people in terms of how good he is.
Yes.
So I thought that was an interesting answer. That. You know, sometimes they don't answer that question. He immediately said Quan Martin. Interesting.
I didn't listen to that podcast, and I'm glad I said it. You know, I wanted to say Luke McCaffrey, but that seems like I'm a little concerned. I was like before, I've been telling all my friends, hey, watch. They bring up McCaffrey because it's his little brother. I said, no, watch. He's not going to be looked at. He was open a lot last year. He should get the ball more, but something's missing. You've talked about it before, and that's why I didn't bring it up. I'm 50-50.
Well, you did bring it up.
So you just
brought it up.
Well, yeah.
See, you snuck in your number two after Quan Martin. Good job, Chad. Good job. Let me get on to another call. Appreciate it. Anthony in D.C., who's the guy that you've been telling your friends this guy's going to have a big 2025?
So if the defensive line holds up like we anticipate or hope that it will, I think it's going to be Louisville.
Anticipate and hope are two different things. Which is it?
Well,
it can be both.
Both.
Okay.
I think it's some of both because the people that they brought in, you know, you have expectations of them.
Right.
But
all right, go ahead.
On what we had last year, you got to hope. So, yeah, I believe it's Louisville because he's the closest thing we have to Micah Parsons. If Micah Parsons is a 10, then Louisville is probably a 7. So if we get the defensive line to perform like that and Witt can use them in the same way, then I expect a big year. But Kevin,
he was a second team all pro last year, Anthony. Second team all pro. He had a great season last year. And you're going to take it a step further, and he's going to end up, what, with double-digit sacks, be a Pro Bowler, and an All-Pro again?
Yes.
I think he could. He's their most talented player defensively, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can I address one more thing before you let me go? So over the course of time, I've heard you describe, you know, what you think Terry is and Terry isn't.
Right.
But I gotta remind you, Your evaluation of players isn't all that good.
Yeah, go ahead. Give me the whole list. I'm sure you have it.
If you think about it, Montez Sweat, Chase Young, Sua Cravens.
I didn't say anything about Sua Cravens. I didn't have an opinion. I didn't have a strong opinion about Sua Cravens.
Okay. Josh Doctson.
Yes.
And there's one more I can't.
You have to start with Josh Doctson. You got to start with Doctson because Chase Young was the number two pick in the draft. Montez Sweat was a big-time prospect and still is a good player.
I would just call them out in no particular order, but those are the names that came to mind.
I would start in auditing my player evaluations. I would start with Josh Doctson. Thank you, Anthony. Appreciate that. Lap in D.C., Lap, what player in your conversations with friends are you saying this guy's going to have a huge year?
Hey, what's up, Kevin?
Hey,
shout out to Mad Max. Hey, I'm going to say, don't forget Kirk Cousins. You know, that's your guy. You love some Kirk Cousins.
Oh, I've gotten a couple right. Not many, just a couple. Yeah.
No, I just had a mess.
Because I didn't. I wasn't a big fan of Jaden Daniels, I guess. In 2023,
You picked that one. You picked that one right on the money because we both were.
But Doxson's the one that I fell in love with, man, because my kid was at TCU and he was a great college receiver, and I thought, wow, they got themselves a great receiver. And obviously, is he even in the league anymore? I don't even think he's in the league, is he?
Oh, you talking about the other Doxson, not the one that we just traded. You talking about
Jahan Dotson I liked, but let's be honest. Kyle Hamilton, I was screaming for them to take Kyle Hamilton in that draft. So that was another definitely. One. I mean, one I of like the very that. Few that I've gotten right. Is Doxson? Yeah. Doxson's Lane. Not in the NFL anymore. He hasn't been in the NFL in a few years. Wow.
Yeah.
He
did show flashes, though.
He was a super nice kid, but very, very much one of those didn't necessarily love football guys. You know who nailed that early? Cooley came back after one of those early practices and said, "I don't know about your guy Doxson." And I said, "Why?" And I said, and he said, "I think he's homesick. He doesn't really love football. He doesn't really like being here." There was a lot of issues just right from the jump in 2016, right? I think so. Anyway, give me your player, Lap. Lap. Oh, we lost Lap? Lap was going to say Jalen Lane, right?
Yes, that was his player.
That's what you put on, yeah. I was thinking a lot of people would have Jalen Lane. Chris in Virginia. Chris, go ahead.
What's up, everybody? How y'all doing?
What's up, Chris?
The player that I got. What's going on? The player that I've got for y'all today, the man with two last names, is Jacory Kroski Merritt. Man, AKA when I Bill. Tell you. Bill, that's our guy. I'm trying to tell everyone that I can tell. We have a lot of talk about Terry and about how our offense might be impacted, and it definitely will be if he's disgruntled or not playing or whatever the case may be. Our run game might be something that shocks a lot of people this year. The line is upgraded. I mean, the run protection from our line isn't like the greatest thing on the planet, but with the committee that we have between B-Rob, Eckler, and Bill, and then you sprinkle in Debo with the flare screens, I think we are really well equipped to do a lot of things that we weren't doing last year. And Jacory himself, his burst is unbelievable. Don't be surprised by if year two he's the head of the running back committee for us. Like, don't be surprised by that. And the other person I was going to say really quickly, it was already mentioned, but Trey Amos, that is a dog. That is a dog, I promise you. So our secondary, I mean, I used to pray for times like this when we had Benjamin St. Juice lining up to guard whoever the hell it was, and now we've got Trey Amos, we've got the rest of the crew going in there. I'm excited, man. I'm excited, but more than anything, we need a sign, Terry. That's all I've got for y'all.
Thanks. By the way, somebody reminded me of this. They sent me a long email, and I'm looking for it as you were talking. When Benjamin St. Juice got picked, went to Minnesota, right? Benjamin St. Juice was the Minnesota quarterback. People after the draft were raving about how Washington got a steal in Benjamin St. Juice. And then during that first rookie summer, this guy reminded me of multiple tweets and multiple things said about Benjamin St. Juice during the summer. Big, closes gap. Doesn't have to run 4.3 because of his size and his arm length. There was a lot of positive vibes about St. Juice coming out and then over the summer. Where is he now? Is he a Charger?
Yes, he is a Los Angeles Charger. And right. Chargers fans are not pleased so far.
Well, yeah, because the preseason means much. Back to our last caller's pick. That was another one I thought. I thought Kroski Merritt Bill, a.k.a. Bill, would be a popular answer to this question. You know, he is dealing with a shoulder injury right now. I wonder if that will keep him out of the game on Monday night. I would also suggest this. You know, although with running backs, sometimes the reason they're not on the field is the other stuff, not the running, the pass protection, etc. But running backs, if they are like extremely talented and it's like so obvious that they're going to be a starting running back in the league, they're not off the field. They're not kept off the field. He'll play. You know, it's not a year two breakout. It could be. I'm not saying that running backs don't break out in year two. But on teams that actually are looking for a player at that spot, if the guy is truly all that, he's going to play. There's no reason other than he isn't getting the offense. He's really weak in pass pro. You know, that can keep guys off the field, no doubt about it. All right, let's take a break, but I see everybody on hold. We also have a line open if you want to jump on. 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. Give me the player that when you're having conversations about our team, you say, this guy's going to have a huge year. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the Team980.com. Don't forget, you can watch the show on our Team 980 YouTube.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.
Cube channel. Hit the subscribe button and hit the like button when you get there.
Jersey schedule for the 2025 season. I've learned a lot here, and I have one favorite pick for the Commanders jersey schedule.
What's that?
All right. So we know the new throwbacks they rolled out, the old uniforms basically, the whites, are called the Super Bowl era uniform.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We already knew this. They're wearing those, the two Sunday night football games, home against the Seahawks week 9, home against the Broncos week 13,
yep.
And then Christmas Day against the Cowboys. I love that. Sunday night's the biggest platform in the NFL, and then Christmas Day against the Cowboys doesn't get any bigger.
Yep.
Do we know, are the Christmas Day games on Netflix? Are they on YouTube? I feel like that's been announced. I can't remember what it is.
It's Netflix.
Netflix. Okay, cool.
I kind of don't worry about what they own because I'm normally at all of them. So,
I know. Yeah. Sure. I'm just saying, like, speaking of the platform, how big that game is. All right. So, real question for you, B. Of the current uniforms, and maybe they just invented this, maybe this already existed. Do you know the terms for the whites and the burgundies?
No.
I didn't either. So they call it the Monument White, which is the, you know, the existing, the rebranded white jersey with the burgundy pants.
Okay.
So they're going to wear the Monument Whites week 1 against the Giants, week 4 in Atlanta, week 5 in L.A. They're going to wear the Monument Whites week 8 Monday Night Football in Kansas City. They're going to wear the Monument Whites week 11 in Madrid against the Dolphins.
All right.
Kind of cool. Week 14 against the Vikings, that's a road game. Week 15 is up in New York against the Giants. And then week 18 is the Eagles. So, they got...
How many total games are they?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. They're wearing the Monument Whites the most.
In 8 games?
8 games.
And then 3 games, the...
3 games, the Super Bowl joints, yeah.
But the Super Bowl era. And then the other 6 games is going to be what?
Hold your horses. Do you know what they call the burgundy jerseys? Legacy Burgundy.
Okay.
They're going to wear the burgundy joints week 2 in Green Bay on that Thursday nighter. Week 3 at home against the Raiders. Week 7 at Dallas.
All right.
Week 10 at home against the Lions. And week 16 against the Eagles.
All right, that's 4 games?
That's 5.
5 and then 1 game in the Blacks?
So they're wearing the burgundy at home against the Eagles, the whites on the road against the Eagles. So there's 1 game where they're wearing the Battle Blacks. And I think they nailed the selection.
Night game?
It's a night game.
Against?
Monday night against the Bears.
All right.
Do you know what they were wearing last year for the Hail Mary?
Yep.
I think anytime they're playing the Bears from here to eternity... Wear the blacks. Like, if you go back to the old uniforms and you only keep the blacks around just to play the Bears in it, you have my full support.
Yeah.
Torture them with that. I hope that corner has a picture of the black uniforms in his locker.
He does. He might have them on his chest the way that they were handling them.
All right, so you have your official uniform release from the Washington Commanders. I thought this was pretty interesting. ESPN.com did a ceiling and floor for every NFL team. Uh-huh. I've said repeatedly, I think the floor for this team is really high, and I think a lot of that is because it is Jaden Daniels driven. When you have a stud quarterback, like the Bengals last year had an awful defense, but Joe Burrow was so damn good, they still won 9 games. They missed the playoffs, but like, it's very rare, barring an injury, if you have a true stud quarterback, that your team is awful.
Yeah, true about that.
Like, you might, things can break wrong, but if you have a true stud quarterback, you're probably getting to 9 wins. Injuries could always change everything.
Yep.
In this ESPN.com article, they said the floor for this team is 7-10.
For Washington?
Yeah. I'm reading now from ESPN.com. This is written by John Keim, who I believe, yeah, John's joining us at 1 o'clock. The floor, they say, I'm just going to read what he says. Washington's offense will face more challenges playing 11 games against teams ranked in the top 13 scoring defenses last season. The Commanders need more from their defense, specifically in the fourth quarter. They ranked 18th in scoring and 13th in yards, though 30th in rushing yards per game. But in the fourth quarter, they ranked 28th or worse in 9 key categories. Damn. Their secondary should be much improved with the addition of rookie corner Trey Amos and a healthy Marshawn Lattimore. But the latter needs to be durable, something he hasn't been the past 3 years. A beefed-up defensive line with multiple key additions, including pass rusher Von Miller, needs to produce. When you see those fourth quarter numbers, don't you think Von Miller was brought here specifically to address some of that?
Yeah, because he talked about playing only a certain percentage of plays, which troubles him a little bit because he can't set people up. I guess he got to set them up a lot quicker now because he's not going to be getting more than 25%. I say 20%, 25%.
One thing I found interesting was he said on Pardon My Take on PFT's podcast, that he expects to play more here than he did in Buffalo. And so maybe that will help him.
How much he played in Buffalo?
I could try to pull up the snap counts. But I think you're right. I think it was around that 20% number.
You want him for the fourth quarter. You're going to try to find a way to make sure he's there for the fourth quarter.
And maybe not on 1st and 10, but like, I think this team wants Von Miller. Von Miller last year for the Bills played on 25% of snaps. Mm-hmm. So I wonder what that'll look like. I mean, what do you think is reasonable to push him to? 30, 35, a third of snaps?
Yeah. Unless there's one day he's feeling real good and he's having a lot of success, let him roll. They'll take care of him in practice.
You got to treat him like
and you say, see you on Wednesday. See you on Friday, Von.
Right.
Say, see you on Friday, and everybody thought, yeah, no, I'm talking about Vaughn.
Just 24. It's interesting, I think, because DQ really takes care of his guys during the week.
Yeah.
Know how to handle Vaughn, and I think if they can balance the snaps during the game so that it's more in the fourth quarter, I think that would help a lot. Like, if you have... This offense is good enough, I believe, that they're going to move the ball plenty. And so if you are up 10 and the opposing team gets the ball in the fourth quarter with 4.5 minutes, and you know maybe it's not true no huddle, but they're going to be going up tempo trying to get a score, That's Miller time, baby.
Yeah. I think he's the type of guy where, you know, if you put him in the game early and he just has great success and he lets you know, this guy can't block me, he may get a little bit more run. Especially in the fourth quarter.
For sure.
I might say you want to go now, you want me to just let you loose in the fourth. Because if the guy you know can't block you, I'll take success early, but I damn sure want it late.
Now, one thing I have said repeatedly is I think the floor for this team is really high, and I think because of Jaden, the floor is really high. I think Terry McLaurin's availability impacts the ceiling of this team, how good they can be. Is this Are we actually talking about the Super Bowl? Like, I think you need Terry on this team to get there.
I think it affects the ceiling and the floor. Because if he's not on the team, I think the floor is going to be a little lower than what we think it is, even though we have Jaden.
True. I mean, it's going to impact the offense.
Yep.
So the per ESPN, the floor is 7-10, the ceiling is 12-5. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, I think that. I think 12-5 is a hell of a record.
It's where they were last year.
Yeah.
Landini, what's your ceiling and what's your floor for these Washington Commanders?
I mean, I think the ceiling is, you know, realistically something like 15-2 or 14-3.
Really? You think that high?
Yeah. And then assuming Jaden doesn't get injured, I would say the floor for me is at least 8 wins.
So I think I'm with you on the wins. I think 8 sounds about right. For you to go that high, you think this offense could just be dominant? Like, how do you get to 15-2 is a hell of a record, dude.
Yeah, I mean, it's just Jaden's second year, and if the you know, the secondary can kind of hold it together a little bit, they could be a lot better.
Secondary should be much improved. I think I'm with Lamphill on the floor at like 8.
Yeah, 7-8 wins. That's the same for me right there, but 15-2 is a lot going on. 15-2 means you got a hell of a defense, too.
If I would have let you guess, who would have said 15-2?
I thought it would be Jeff.
I thought it would be Jeff, too. Jeffrey, what's your ceiling? What's your floor?
He might be rubbing off on Lamphill.
He's coming in undefeated.
Yeah, if Lamphill taking 15-2, I'm taking 17-0. It's like, I don't know, man. I see us realistically like 13-4. Because it's like, I just think without division games, them games can go either way.
Agreed.
That I believe that could be a problem.
So what's your floor then?
My floor? Oh, at least 10-7. At least. We got to make a run at the playoffs. If we addressing problems that we had last season. Now, if we don't make it to the NFC Championship again, I'll be fine with that. But we need to at least be in the playoffs.
I'm with you on that. The playoffs are vital. More slump, all that stuff, just making it to the playoffs. And I believe they have a good enough team to get it done. And if everything works out how we expect it to work out, I think they have a team to be able to get in the playoffs, and people will have to be concerned about them.
I agree with that. I think to have a floor that's 3 games over .500 is a little high. I do think it's a difficult schedule. I do think there's, you know, they clearly tried to rebuild this defense for a purpose,
mm-hmm.
to be better against the run, but you still got to see it happen.
There's a little saying, JP, called know your personnel. So when you ask Jeff a question, you need to expect you can't expect logical answers. You gotta expect Jeff.
Hold on. 10-7 is logical.
That's the floor, you said.
Yeah, the floor.
Okay.
It's not that far off from us saying like 8-9 wins. I find this interesting. Just in this ESPN article, they have the Bears basically just one game different than Washington. Ceiling of 11-6, floor of 6-11. The optimism surrounding the Bears, I find pretty damn interesting.
Well, everyone is giving all that credit to Ben Johnson. And I don't think we truly know that Ben Johnson is that capable right now.
I agree, dude. Rookie head coach might be great. Rookie head coach with a second-year quarterback that has some, like, legitimate things to work on. I don't know. He's got undeniable arm talent, too. I find that curious. What would you say the Eagles' floor is?
Eagles' floor? If everything is like it was last year.
Let's check in with old White Brian. New York Football Giants. WB, that's your squad. What is the floor for the New York Giants?
1-3 wins.
That's a The ceiling you say is 3 weeks?
That's the floor. That's the floor. All right. So what is the ceiling for the Giants?
11.
What?
How do they get to 11, White Brian?
Russell Wilson turns back the clock. Malik Nabers has 2,000 receiving yards. And Cam Scadabo and Tyron Tracy are a great backfield.
What is more likely to you? The Giants open against the Commanders here. Then they get the Cowboys at home. Then they get the Chiefs and the Chargers all in the Meadowlands. Of those first four games, what is more likely? 0-4 or 4-0?
0-4.
If they're 0-4, does Daboll make it to Halloween?
I think Daboll makes it until December.
So the Giants start, I didn't realize both of their first two games are on the road, NFC East division games. Division games are just so crazy. The Giants schedule is pretty damn hard too. So ESPN.com says this, the floor for the Giants is 4-13. The ceiling is 9-8. For those Dallas Cowboys, they say the floor is 5-12. The ceiling is 11-6. Of Dallas, they wrote, how ready is Brian Schottenheimer for his first head coaching job? He saw his father, Marty, coach four teams and has been an assistant coach in the NFL for more than 20 years. Players like the culture he has built so far in the spring and summer, but he will be counted on to make split-second decisions that will make impact and winning and losing, which ultimately will be how he is judged. The Cowboys aren't a typical team given the attention they receive on an hourly basis.
Yeah.
Good luck. Good luck, Brian.
We will see about him.
Remember earlier, he's like, yeah, I've had a ton of opportunities. I just turned them down.
I don't buy that. I don't buy that whatsoever.
Do you think Brian Schottenheimer
has... And he know this one here feels like he's going to be like a little puppet. And somebody else going to be speaking for him.
What do you believe more in?
A ventriloquist.
Brian Schottenheimer's previous head coaching opportunities or Jeff Walker catching a pass against Fred Smoot in coverage?
Jeff catching the pass.
I don't know. I think we could discuss this, EB. We're talking about something off air.
I don't want to.
Well, you're wondering whether we stole a segment 20 years ago
I don't want to talk about an appearance. I don't want to talk about it.
We had good times back then.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't think we did. I don't think we did either.
I'm pretty confident that we had a movie come out, and back when we were at HFS, like we did the Shea Whitey rapper contest because we had the tickets to give away for the premiere for 8 Mile. Mm-hmm. And we used to get a lot of movies that we would have to promote. And the movie came out for that particular contest.
Mm-hmm. I just don't want to get into it.
Okay, it's fine. It's fine. You don't have to get into it.
Yeah.
All right, it is Open Line Thursday.
Yeah.
Phone number is 800-636-1067.
I wanted to get into the Colin Cowherd audio when he was talking about Jaden Daniels. I don't know if Valdez has that ready to go.
I know. But I think Drabby asked him to pull it up. I was listening to it actually this morning when I was driving. Yeah, it was actually a really good conversation. I'm not a Colin Cowherd guy for or against. I just don't listen to the guy. But I listened to this segment, and I thought he made quite a few good points. Quite a few interesting points, for sure.
About Jaden.
I'll say this. About Jaden and about quarterbacks. It's very similar to what I think about quarterbacks and fit and how all these guys are great. A lot of them. It kind of depends on where you land. It's so huge.
Yeah.
And also...
Who you have around you.
He also had a very interesting point about where you came from. But I don't know. Let's listen to...
Let me just preface this by saying, I do listen to Cowherd on occasion. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's on TV. That's what I see when I see him on TV. Because I don't even know if he's available on the radio here. I do know... I saw him say he believes that Jaden Daniels he said only two rookies he's ever seen have had years like Jaden Daniels had. He said Jaden Daniels and Andrew Luck, best rookies he's ever seen.
Right. He keeps alluding to that kind of in this conversation.
Jaden Daniels got some breaks. Number one, he didn't go to Chicago. They can't get quarterback right. Number two, he didn't get a coach on the hot seat. Number three, he didn't get the oldest and arguably strangest ownership group in the NFL, the McCaskies. That stuff matters. Instead, he goes to Washington. and his loony owner got flushed out at the end of that last season. So he gets a new owner, new GM, new coach, new momentum, new culture, with a very, very mature number one wide receiver. And he wasn't the number one pick. He was the number two pick. And we always spend more time talking about the number one pick. So I'm not saying he landed in Kansas City like with Andy Reid and Mahomes, but ask yourself this. And I love Jaden Daniels, but this is where Andrew Luck has him beat. Think about the winningest quarterbacks in the last several years in the NFL. Mahomes, Lamar, Josh Allen, Jaden Hurts, Jordan Love. What do they have in common? None of them entered the league in chaos. Here's who did. Bryce Young, Caleb Williams, Justin Herbert, Trevor Lawrence. Not so shockingly, they've had bumpier roads and more turbulence. I mean, a great example is Bo Nix. Half the GMs were not high on him. He gets Sean Payton, a good O-line. He looks great. Caleb Williams, everybody kind of thought he was special. Bad everything. Coach, coordinators, O-line. He looks completely lost. So don't undervalue, even for somebody as good as Jaden Daniels, don't undervalue how many breaks he got. I mean, the owner, sharp. The general manager, Adam Peters, super sharp. Cliff Kingsbury may not be a head coach, excellent coordinator. The O-line, PFF had it ranked number 10, a mature receiver at number one. And even if he wasn't mature, he's a number one receiver. And a very workable schedule. Remember this. Jaden Daniels only one time last year beat a playoff team. And that was against Philadelphia when Jalen Hurts got hurt. And most of the game he faced Kenny Pickett. So if you look at the quarterbacks he beat, it was Daniel Jones twice, Kyler Murray, Deshaun Watson in the disaster in Cleveland, Andy Dalton, Caleb Williams, Will Levis, Jake Haener, Michael Penix, Trey Lance, and Kenny Pickett. He played Lamar Baker and Jalen Hurts. He lost. He even lost to Russell Wilson. So two things can be true. I think he's just a tremendous player. But the landing spot is really crucial. And what you think of Washington is, what a mess. They weren't a mess. They had all new people. Remember before J-Mac and I argued about this, J-Mac said, how can you be good with all that change? And I said, when all the stuff you flushed out was awful and all the new stuff is good, I am for change. And I had told you, I thought he was going to look like Lamar Jackson, not quite as nimble athletically, but much better in the pocket. And that's what happened. But do I think Jaden Daniels, if you put him in Carolina, would have been that? I do not. Where you land really matters.
I think it makes a really compelling argument. And yeah, it's not, I mean, it is not knocking Jaden.
They're all good points.
So I know that there's probably an HGTC crowd. Yeah,
he said he's great.
I'm sure that they hear what they want to hear. I'm sure there's HGTC crowd that are just like livid. No, he's not knocking. I mean, he's just saying where you land does matter. Yeah. He also later, you don't have to keep playing it. I feel like we like stole from him almost. We let him do a segment for us.
Yeah.
He also made a great comment later, Valdez, where he said, he was talking about Brock Purdy. Mm-hmm. And that, Brock Purdy, God, remind me where he came from. Iowa State. Right. Yep. Brock Purdy coming from Iowa State. And he said, Cal, those quarterbacks, they don't have perfect situations like they have at Alabama. And they learn how to deal with adversity. And this is a separate issue. But he said, at Alabama, all those quarterbacks, they got all day. They got the greatest coaches, the greatest talent. They don't have any adversity. They come to the NFL level, and Bryce Young's not to say he's bad, but he hasn't dealt with all the stuff he has to deal with, right? But these other guys, they're running around like a chicken with their head cut off, learning to make plays on the run, learning how to deal with adversity, learning how to create, right? I thought it was an interesting comment. Whereas, when you come from a school that's not as polished and as elite, it might be a better breeding ground for a quarterback.
There's definitely some truth to that.
Yeah.
I think Quinn, after they drafted Jaden Daniels, actually said him transferring was a positive, mm-hmm. because it showed that he could work in two different systems.
For sure.
With two different coaches.
Pick it up.
Different schemes, different players, and could succeed in both.
Definitely. Definitely.
Well, look, if Jaden was drafted by Ron Rivera, and Dan Snyder still owned the team.
Right.
I mean, I think it's obvious he certainly wouldn't have had the year that
he
had last year.
I don't even remember. Who was Ron's coordinator? Who was Ron's OC?
Scott Turner originally, then Bieniemy. Yeah. Your boy Bieniemy.
Bieniemy, forgot? He would have ruined him. Oh my God, Bieniemy would have ruined him.
Yeah. So he wouldn't have had the success that he had last year. That's pretty obvious.
Well, remember, Bieniemy had that one game when Sam Howell dropped back like 50 times and they had 11 runs. We're like, wasn't this guy a running back?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like you got a new guy out there. You're trying to remember. I was so critical of Kingsbury for being like early on. He was a little
training
slow.
Training wheels. Yeah,
and the first couple games, especially like the week one, they really didn't have him like push the envelope. But I thought that Jaden was particularly advanced. It appeared. Let's let this kid go. But like, you can only imagine what Bieniemy would have done with him. He could be dropped back and throw 50 times.
But a lot of run 25 times.
Yeah, or he'd run 50 times.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff that Cowherd talked about, we've talked about ad nauseum in terms of the breaks that they got on the field.
That's true.
On the field against against the teams that they beat, against the quarterbacks.
Not to say that we're not going to be good, but they did. They benefited and they capitalized also with what they did on fourth down.
Yeah.
And all that.
Yeah.
But there's no doubt that Josh Harris created an environment that is totally different than Dan Snyder. It's not to say that you're going to hit on the quarterback, but Peters, Quinn, Jaden did walk into a better situation.
Let me tell you something.
If he went into, it's not to say he wouldn't be good in Chicago or Carolina, but it would not be the same situation as what he had here.
I'm willing to even go so far as to say if Dan was here, he would have traded up to get Caleb because Caleb was sexy name, and he wouldn't have known nothing about Jaden. He wouldn't have known nothing about Jaden. Yeah. He would have advocated. Now,
been Haskins all over
again. He would have advocated trade up for Caleb, and not to say Caleb's bad because I think Caleb in the right situation could be a stud. Mm-hmm. And I just think he's going to be a little bit of a roller coaster, but I think he's got super talent. But the ownership is a massive factor.
It would have been totally different.
It would have been totally different.
Yes,
and
front office totally different.
We argued last year about how we tried to like do the whole credit pie. And how much Cliff Kingsbury was part of the offense's success. But in Chicago, Caleb Williams went to a offense coordinator that gets scrutinized all the time. Mm-hmm. And then his head coach gets fired midway through. Look, it was a fortunate situation. That said, just a little tidbit is for his argument. He was like, when he faced Lamar and he faced Baker, he didn't beat him. Well, he did beat Baker in the playoffs.
He beat Baker.
Mm-hmm. And he beat Jared Goff in the playoffs.
Correct.
So, yes, the regular season, they took advantage of lesser quarterbacks.
Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. But like you said, when you get in the playoffs, you're going to be facing good quarterbacks. So,
but they also were coming off a 4-win season and turned that into 12 wins in the regular season plus 2 playoff games.
I mean, the roster was completely flipped. It was completely flipped.
I will say I'm getting a little skittish now because where offenses look – I keep saying it today. The offenses looked – suspect all camp. Doesn't mean anything, but it's meaning something in my brain. Okay?
You need a soccer performance?
I need some sort of fake breakout performance to get my enthusiasm back up.
If Jaden steps on the field and they just one drive,
that would
and
help.
Score.
That would help. Get everybody involved. Certainly it'll help you get 17 back in there. But also just all the breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And you got me thinking yesterday. I hadn't really thought about it. I don't really care about it. But the Giants are going to be formidable. It's not going to be it's not going to be a pushover.
Yeah, they're not. They're not going to be a 3-14 team.
Yes, they're not.
They might win 6 or 7, but that's clearly cares? Much better than last year.
Who cares if they only win 6 games, but like every game's close or something?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like it's different. I think they're going to be different. So I have to say I'm shaking in my boots a little bit.
Yeah, but you still think that they're going to average 29 points a game. So
I did until this camp, and now we just can't move the ball, can't score against anybody.
Yeah.
I actually have lost my swagger on that, too. My swagger.
Cliff's saving the good stuff for the opponents.
I know that's generally true. I'm just being reactive. And right now, it's kind of being annoying that every day, the reports are offense basically sucked.
I've agreed, though, with your premise all along that I believe they're a better team, particularly on offense. All right, this is assuming Terry's playing.
Right.
They may not have a better record. They're not going to have a last-place schedule.
I've said that for 6 months straight. Yeah,
I mean, to me, it's almost common sense. They're going to have a tougher schedule.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're probably not likely to catch the breaks they particularly caught on the back end when they faced the just horrendous quarterbacks. Correct. And Jake Haener.
You know what?
So they could win. They could be a better team, but win 2-3 less games.
Easily. That's what I've said for 6 months.
And maybe not even make the playoffs.
I think I said it before last season even ended. I was already doom and glooming, being worried.
But I think it could flip on a dime, EB, if in week one they put up 35 points because Jaden's there and Terry's there and the offense
then
rolls.
Then I'll be like, all is right with the world.
Like it did in the playoffs for the most part.
Yes.
Where they weren't. I mean, Trustway, if you were to compare Trustway's stats from 2023 to 2024, it's night and day. The amount of punts.
He had a million punts one year and like five last year.
He had games where he didn't punt the ball.
Correct.
Right.
In the playoffs.
It's just think about how disappointing it would be, though, if they do take that step back and don't make the playoffs this year. With all the people they added, with all the hype they've gotten in the offseason, the expectations are there.
No doubt. 800-636-1067 is the number. It's Open Line Thursday. We're the Junkies. Be right back.
Well, and Dan Quinn said he anticipates playing the starters against the Bengals. I think that we need to see, or rather, we would like to see something good out of that first team offense before they line up against the Giants. I'm not saying like I'm going on the radio full panic mode or anything, but everything we've seen so far has been sloppy or not good enough to beat the New York Giants. I'm aware there are injuries. I'm aware, there are lots of extenuating circumstances. Jaden Daniels can't run, et cetera. I would like to see one really good series out of that first team offense, enough that we can all just settle down for a couple weeks, get ready for the opener. You got one more chance to do that now, and it's against the Bengals.
Wouldn't that be nice? That was Michael Phillips, who joined us on our Beltway Blitz. Welcome back in, Grant and Danny on the Fan. Commanders getting ready to get a good look at the Bengals on Monday night. First time they've played since week 3, Monday Night Football. You and I were there.
That was a fun one.
Thanks to our friends Kandori and Murad, the law firm, kmlawyers.com, that sponsored us and sent us on the road a few times last season, including to Cincy on Monday night. What an environment that was as we got to watch the Commanders beat the Bengals. That was the night everybody found out Jaden Daniels, real deal Holyfield.
It was spectacular, back and forth. Nobody could stop anybody. Basically, Washington had one stop in there, and that was the stop for the game.
38-33 shootout.
Yeah.
Do you know that the Bengals were 4-4 in games last year where they scored over 30 points?
That's pretty amazing.
4-4.
Yeah, that's one of the second four.
Okay, if you're getting close to 40, you got a 50% chance of getting a win.
Like, make two tackles, and you probably win the game. But yeah, they couldn't stop Washington at all. It was that throw to McLaurin from our vantage point. We were in the upper tank, not terrible super far, but like kind of towards the front of the upper tank. We were at the goal line, basically.
Level.
Yeah, club level. So we were there at the goal line on the opposite side from where McLaurin caught the ball, if that makes any sense. So you could see the whole thing develop. When he threw the football, his clock gets clean, talking about Jaden Daniels, get knocked on his butt, and so then you watch the flight of the ball, maybe glance back and go, oh God, please get up, please be okay. McLaurin's not open. McLaurin is a step, maybe a step and a half on the closer to the line of scrimmage side than is where the defender is. Runs by him, gets by him, toe taps, touchdown. Everybody's looking at each other. Kandori, Morad, you, me, there's everybody there. Just mouth agape. Cannot believe what we had just seen.
Well, Jaden Daniels last year as a rookie threw the football 480 times in the regular season. He threw the ball another, 75, let's say, in the playoffs. Not one of those passes was better than the one you just described.
Yeah.
Where he got drilled in the chest, helmet, whatever it was, face mask, by an oncoming defender, laid the ball out in the back of the end zone in a way that you couldn't have walked it to Terry McLaurin and handed it to him any more effectively. Beautiful throw, game on ice, winner, winner, chicken dinner, and you just had your coming out party on national television. If that game was Sunday at 1 o'clock, would have been a really great thing. It would have been a big deal.
You have seen some highlights.
Wouldn't have quite been the same now, would it? This was everybody watching. I remember we went back to their room. They had a big suite. And we went back to, we're all sitting there and we rewatched the game for a couple hours. Just like, oh my God, that play. How did that play look? Oh, look at that throw. All right, here it comes. Here comes the moment. What a night. So Bengals will be some good memories as they get to Northwest Stadium. But after the Bengals is the Ravens. So just like in 2023 in the preseason 2 years ago, Washington's going to wrap up with weeks 2 and 3 of the exhibition campaign with Cincy and Baltimore from the AFC North. But the plan was to spend multiple days practicing with the Ravens here in Ashburn before the third preseason game, which starters almost certainly are not going to play in. So what happens for these teams is you get your schedule, okay? Then you get your preseason schedule. And then based on the preseason schedule, you lay out your joint practice ideals. You call the teams. You say, okay, New England, can we come to your place? It's a home game for you. We'll put our entire team on planes. It'll be a gigantic pain in the tuchus, but we'll get up there on Wednesday. We'll be there through Saturday. We'll fly back Saturday night. In this case, the game is Friday. Friday night late. It's a 3-day trip for us. It's not ideal, but we need to get the work. And you work it out with Mike Vrabel and the Patriots, and you sign up and you execute your plan. Bengals, for whatever reason, second week of preseason, I don't know if they didn't want to come or they were busy or maybe they're practicing with somebody else close enough to them or they just decided it wasn't necessary. They didn't strike a deal with Washington to come here early this week. But the Commanders did get a deal done, and it makes great sense.
Yep.
With the geographical rivals, they're buddies right up the north from the AFC, the purple and black clad Baltimore Ravens. And they were going to come down here ahead of next Saturday night's final preseason game for workouts, presumably on either Wednesday, Thursday, or you know, just Thursday and then a walk through Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Except that we found out today that the Ravens have backtracked on that. They are no longer going to be participating in these joint workouts. The joint workouts, which have become more helpful to the teams than preseason games, as coaches say all the time. The joint workouts, which are the quote-unquote good work we got in, which is why we can sit, guys. Here's the problem I'm going to have when everyone tries to tell me this isn't a big deal. The same people tell me that preseason games don't matter because the joint workouts are now the preseason games. The joint workouts are all you need to get ready for the regular season. You got to do those. Those are great. Those are helpful. And that's true. But you can't play it both ways. You cannot both tell me preseason games and not playing it all in the preseason, irrelevant, doesn't matter. Joint practices is what gets you ready for the season.
Got to do something.
Cool. And then tell me at the same time that a team that was planning on these joint practices, replacing the third preseason game, now not getting those joint practices, is in no way worse off for that. It's got to be both. It can't be just, you got to choose a lane here.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to read the statement from the Ravens because it makes no sense to me as to why they're not participating. They released this today at about 11 a.m. Recognizing the logistical challenges with our team's previous games scheduled on different days and the added strain on players heading into a short week, the Ravens and Commanders mutually agreed to no longer hold a joint practice next week. Instead, we will concentrate on preparing for our upcoming preseason matchup. Now, I guess it is possible that the Commanders who play on Monday Night Football don't want to get back on the practice field for like a grueling, taxing practice just a couple days later, say on a Wednesday or a Thursday, and go really get after it with the Ravens. And so maybe they broached this and said, hey, Baltimore. But the Ravens put out the statement.
Yeah.
Washington didn't. That is telling to me. The Commanders still to this moment have put out zero statements. I would think that the Ravens putting out the statement means they're the team more than Washington that doesn't want to do this.
That's how I read those tea leaves there. And again, the logistics do not favor Washington in this circumstance. Baltimore plays the Cowboys on the 16th. Washington, as you already mentioned, and we already know, plays the Bengals on the 18th. And they're turning around to play on August 23rd.
Ravens will be home in their facility with two nights sleep by the time Washington gets back from Northwest and their Monday night game with the Bengals.
So I remember looking at this when the schedule first came out, and I went, that's really unusual. 10 games between preseason game one, preseason game two, and 5 days between two and three with the joint practice in there? Head scratch? Doesn't seem ideal, but I guess, you know, this is a, you know, anytime, anywhere, anybody, any parking lot, any alleyway, we'll fight you kind of a thing.
Just but not during the preseason after we play on Monday night.
I guess. Yeah, so who knows who I would guess that it was the Ravens' idea to back out of it or whatever. You know, I don't begrudge. You do what's best for a football team. But
the schedules are known, no?
But yeah, my point is this is not good. Like, that's where I'm at. Because I have long been a, hey, here's what the trend line is. It's not these meaningless preseason games. It's the joint work. It's where you can, you know, pick a bunch of scenarios and drill the things, and the work is better than, well, we'll just go meander where this preseason game takes us, and a bunch of guys that aren't playing, you know, spend 80% of the time on the field. This is bad. Like, this is not a good thing.
The joint practices aren't announced after, excuse me, but before the games. They are announced based on the fact that you're playing this team.
Right.
It's not a coincidence. They had the joint practices with the Patriots in New England because they were about to play a game there. Just like the Ravens were coming to Ashburn for practices because they were about to play a game with the Commanders. Yeah. Now, in their case, I would imagine, like a Thursday practice, they're not going to stay in Northern Virginia, which is nowhere near Landover, Maryland. Mm-hmm. Their facility is frankly closer to the stadium than Ashburn probably is.
Yeah, in terms of how much time it would take you.
Comparable. So what they would do is they would bus all the way down here, pain in the butt, get a day of practice in, probably one, I would guess, then get back on buses, then go back to Owings Mills, and then stay there overnight, get another walkthrough in, and then play. I don't think they would stay down here until the game. It just doesn't make any sense. So that's probably part of the overall algorithm as to how this happened. But the idea that they're saying we're mutually calling this off based on the schedules and playing on different days. You knew the schedule when you scheduled this. The Commanders knew they were playing the Bengals on Monday. The Ravens knew they were playing on Saturday night. You said Dallas?
Yes.
And knowing the schedule, they go, all right, we're going to have a few days. Would you want to do Thursday, Friday at our place? Would you want to do Friday at our place before the Saturday game? I guess it wouldn't be Friday. Thursday at our place. We could do Wednesday and Thursday. You could stay overnight. We could work it all out over 2 days. Yeah, no problem. Let's do it. Nothing's changed.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no game added. There's been no schedule tweak. There's been no extra practice sessions worked in or worked out. So the logic makes no sense to me. If you're going to tell me we're not doing the practices, that's fine. But I need a better excuse than the schedule that we already knew about when we booked this.
Yeah, it's we don't want to. And, okay, did you when you signed up to do it? Again, I noticed the logistics for Washington's side of this. Where I go, 5 days later, you're playing the third preseason game, and you're doing a joint practice?
But the joint practice could have just been good on good, really heavy ones, you know, 11 on 11. You could kind of dictate all that with the Ravens because you're not playing the starters in the game, and then it's all backups.
No, totally. But my point is I'm going, if preseason game number two is the one that matters, which it is, my starters or my ones or whomever's important is going to play at least some or significant chunk of that game. Logistically, that means probably Wednesday or Thursday, less than 48 hours after you finish, popping pads, you're going to go do that with, again, the meaningful players. You're getting great work against a great team and a group that's probably going to win 12, 13, 14 games this year. I'm all for that. I wanted that. But I noticed that and went, man, that is interesting. And now it seems that may have been too much to bite off, maybe from the Ravens' perspective. But my point is, I noticed those logistics a while ago and went, okay, if that's the plan, that's the plan. So be it. I'm sure thoughtful people have had good thoughts about it, and it now seems that that doesn't work for everybody anymore, which is a bummer.
In addition to just being annoyed that I think the Ravens probably were heavily involved in calling this off, they're saying it's mutual. Again, the team didn't put out a statement, which just makes it feel less cooperative from the Commanders. If they did call the Ravens, and they were the leaders to call this off, which would make more sense based on their rest, not Baltimore's, mm-hmm. then not putting out a joint statement or Washington not putting out a statement at all is actually kind of a dirty move a little bit. Because I think the optics just look like the Ravens are calling off practice.
Mm-hmm.
What's on your mind right now? The song you can't get out of your head? That breaking story? Or that conversation you just have to be a part of?
That's the brand new song from...
This is a breaking news report.
He shoots! He scores!
That's radio. Happening now. Connecting you to what matters most exactly when it's happening. From the airwaves to every device you stream on, radio is everywhere you are. It's local, live, and it's for you. Tag your favorite radio station this Wednesday on social media and use hashtag National Radio Day to celebrate. That's hashtag National Radio Day.